on Yud Amud Beis at the Mishnah, five lines down. Remember that when we had the discussion about the series of Hachana issues, or not Hachana issues, but potential Muktzeh issues.
I just want to tell you a
story. Ah, story. Is this for the tape, or is this for the tape off?
It's really interesting, because you said, you know,
yes.
And you said, what's the relevance, like, in these days? Who really cares? But I want to tell you that my aunt has now chickens in her backyard, and is starting to lay eggs.
Okay.
So the question, what happens with the egg that was laid on the altar, and it's actually a real case, so...
Yeah. There are an awful lot of people in this world who actually have chickens.
That's the thing, so really, I was like, oh, but remember?
Yes, but
it
actually
has some relevance, even though you don't... It's funny.
So did you check what time of day they're laying the eggs to, you know, match that up with our discussion?
Sleep by the time
actually,
the egg was laid.
Actually, if there's a bunch of eggs, and one of them was laid on the altar, you don't know which one it was...
So that goes back to our discussion about whether eggs can be batel or they're davar shiyeshu matirin, and whether it's a davar chashuv. That's the discussion that we had. The short answer is no, not going to be batel. Whether for whatever reason, you know, you can pick your reasons from the Gemara earlier, but no, it's not going to be batel. But they are. Remember, we had the discussion about shadarka limanos and kol shadarka limanos, and eggs are always sold by number. You never sell eggs by volume. No one is selling a box of eggs. Because the point is that each one stands independently. We don't view them as being just something in a mix, like a grain of sand and a bunch of sand, or the equivalent. So I think it would not be batal. So we're now in this discussion about hazmana and dedicating birds before Yom Tov. And what we have here is a case of hazmana problems. What happens if the hazmana goes wrong? Zimein shchorim. You wanted to have birds for poultry for tomorrow, and you dedicated some black chickens or doves, whatever they are. Umatza levanim. And you come back the next day, and there are white birds there. Now, Rashi adds a note here, and I don't yet know why. I didn't really look into it. But Rashi, if you take a look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Zimein shchorim, v'lo haya sham od. There were no other birds there. You only dedicated blackbirds, and there were no white birds there at all. I don't know why Rashi says that yet.
It's pretty pashut, though, isn't it?
Why?
Because if there are other birds there,
yeah,
and he didn't dedicate those birds, then those birds for sure would be usher.
But that's also true of the birds that weren't there.
Well, this is machlokes, though.
No, birds that weren't there are not dedicated. There's no question about that. The only birds that are dedicated are birds that I actually prepared. If there's a bird there and I don't prepare it, it's not prepared.
Isn't it possible to somehow come up with a story that the birds changed from being black to white?
So, you know, it's an interesting idea. So far, we haven't seen that, and we won't see it in today's Gemara.
Are you sure that Hayah is the birds? It's him.
No.
Are you sure that it's in Hayu?
Interesting, but no. The only thing you could do with the Haya, I suppose, this is an interesting read, maybe along the lines of what Charlie is saying, is you didn't stay there any longer, and therefore you didn't see what happened to them.
That's how I understand it.
That's an interesting way to read it. Okay, maybe that's what he's saying. The Ulamachar Matzah HaKol Levanim. The next day, you come back, and there are white birds there, and there are no black birds. So vaday hamizumanim holchu lahem ve'elu acherim da'asuluhu me'am l'shovach. So we say with certainty, despite Alan's idea about the magician changing the birds' colors, the birds that were there that you dedicated, they're gone, and these birds that are there now are brand new birds. And you'll see that also in ensuing cases here in the Mishnah, the idea that birds switched. So what happens now? I know that the birds I dedicated are not the birds that are sitting there at this point. Or back in the Mishnah, vice versa, levanim u'matzah shchorim. You dedicated white birds, and then you come back and you find black birds. Shnayim u'matzah shlosha. You dedicated two birds, and then you came back and found three birds there. Asurim. Those birds are all off limits. And the idea in the last case with the numbers is simply that I don't know which ones I dedicated, and therefore if I take the wrong bird, I'm using a non-dedicated bird. So even though you'll tell me, well, you have a 2 out of 3 shot, right, that's not good enough. We're going to make the statement that that they're aser. Shlosha humatsa shnayim mutarim. On the other hand, if you dedicated 3 birds and you come back and you find only 2, so these are mutar. I'm allowed to assume that the 2 that I find there are 2 of my original 3.
But if you designated 2 and he found 3, we're presuming no color?
Yeah, we're not discussing color now. There's no way to tell the difference based on color. They're all white, they're all black, colorblind, I don't know. Yeah.
But if he designated 2 birds and they happen to be black, and the 3 in the example being given were 2 black and a white, would it not be okay?
That would be a different story altogether. Then I am able to identify.
Okay, right. So it's,
we're dealing with a case here where I can.
All the same.
If I can identify, then I'm great. Then I have no problems. The question here is fundamentally, once you introduce change into the scenario, and you say, you're saying that at least one bird that was there left, so maybe I should assume all 3 left. And these 2 are new birds. That's the idea, that I can't actually tell them apart.
Okay. Big pillow.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, big pillow in the previous Mishnah that basically said you just had to identify the birds and say, I'm going to use those birds. We said that was acceptable.
Correct.
So now, how is it possible that you have 3 birds and you can't tell from the 3 which 2 we picked? Like, how can we say then you have a whole bunch of birds, and you could say those 2 are not muksa out of 10, and now 2 out of 3 you can't tell which 2 are the 2 he identified.
What's the problem? Well, the answer is that what we wanted him to do, what Basila was hoping he would do, was pick distinct birds, birds that he's not going to confuse with the others. That was what was supposed to happen.
I thought it just meant that he knows all 10 birds.
Like, okay, but that's the same thing.
Right.
I mean, the point is that he should be able to identify, and we're dealing now with a case where he couldn't. For whatever reason, whether it's because he's inept or because chickens look alike, you know, whatever the reason is.
But why, if chickens look alike, then regardless of the color, if he designates 2, how does he have any clue that those 2 might be the same 2 the next morning?
Right, so that's what I'm saying to Howie. You have to assume that there is an ability, there is a way to tell the difference. I mean, I don't believe that chickens all look alike. Chickens all look alike to me because I have no expertise with chickens. But if I raised chickens, then after whatever period of time, I would be able to tell you, this is the one that goes here and this is the one that goes there, and name them and whatever else. The reality is, like people who have pets, right? So people who have dogs. Yeah, to me, you know, all dogs of the same basic color and species look alike. But to their owner, they can tell the difference between them. It's like babies. Right? All babies look the same. Except if they're your grandchildren. They, don't start. You know better than that. They, Swiss people. They, so, the Mishnah says that if you had 3, and now there are 2, we don't say that once uncertainty is introduced and movement is introduced, I should have to be scared that these are 2 brand new birds. Even though I am unable to really distinguish them. Or I shouldn't say that. Even though I can't say for sure that the birds that I left behind are the same as these. Nonetheless, I can take that as a, I can take that as given. That's what he's saying. If you left the birds inside the nest, and you come back on Yom Tov, and they're sitting outside the nest, asurim, then they are off limits, the reason being that I assume these are brand new birds. But if these are the only birds in the area, then in fact we will say that they are mutar. And the Gemara is going to have to discuss this case. It's not straightforward. But the Gemara is first. But that's the basic Mishnah here. To ask the Bittul question, not in terms of eggs, but in terms of birds. When you dedicate 2 birds, and now there are 3 birds sitting there, so we say they're usur, right? Because there's a 3rd bird there, and you may end up with a bird that you did not dedicate. Why can't you argue Bittul? Yeah. Why can't you argue that the 3rd one is literally Bittul Barov, it's 2 to 1. So Rashi here avoids the problem altogether. Right? The way Rashi says the case, the where was it? 1 second. He doesn't recognize which ones are the ones that he dedicated. Kulam asurim. So they're all going to be asur. I wrote in my notes that according to Rashi this isn't a question, but now I'm not sure why. Why will Rashi say this is not a question?
Because it means he doesn't recognize any of them.
And therefore,
none of them may be the valid ones.
But if he does recognize...
There's doubt in his mind.
Oh, another thing Rashi is trying to say is, you don't recognize any of them, and therefore you don't know about any of them being good. Maybe none of them are good. I hear that. Okay, maybe that's what I was thinking. But Tosfos gives a different answer. Tosfos Ika...
It doesn't say that, Rashi.
What do you mean?
Probably it doesn't recognize the ones that he designated.
Right, but that means he doesn't know any of them. What he's saying was what I've been thinking. He doesn't know whether his muhanim are among these or are not among these. He has no idea.
So what?
So therefore, you can't tell me it's batal barov, because say it's batal barov requires that I know that two of them are fine. For all I know, zero of them are fine.
Where does it say that?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Where does that come from?
Because batal barov requires that there be a rov.
Yeah, but since when do I have to recognize if I have a pot of meat? Since when do I have to recognize which meat was my, was...
Oh, no, I don't. No, that I don't need. But I need to know that the rest of the meat was kosher. If you tell me the following case, okay? Somebody walked into your kitchen and threw a non-kosher piece of meat into a pot that had meat in it. And you want to say, well, that's okay, it's batal along with everything else, because the rest of it is kosher meat.
Right.
That's fine, but only if you know the rest of it is kosher meat. If you don't know...
Yeah, I agree.
So that's, but that's
hardly
the point.
That's hardly a comparable case to this case.
Here. But it is. What Rashi is saying is, you don't know that any of them are the birds you've designated. Because you don't know, you have three birds there, right? We're going to call them 1, 2, and 3.
What difference does it make?
It doesn't matter what I call them.
If they're the only birds around or not.
What about any of the birds? No, forget whether there are any birds
from,
or not.
You
don't know anything, exactly.
The other neighbors.
Correct.
But we say here they're kosher.
But that's the next case with the cane.
No, what we say...
What we're saying here is
us, sir.
No, that's us, sir. But yeah. The next case is the next case.
Right now we're on this case. They're two different issues.
But it's the same fundamental issue, though. He doesn't recognize any of the birds, period.
Yeah.
He doesn't recognize them.
Yeah.
The fact that they're the only birds that are in the area, what difference should that make?
The fact that they are the only birds in the area is not part of this case. Let's say they're not the only birds in the area. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but why should the next case be mutter? Based on Rashi's philosophy, position, you'd have to say that he recognizes these birds.
Except if you look at the rest of the Mishnah, you have the two cases. You have the cane,
yeah.
Where if you have other birds and it was you designated in the cane and they're in front, it's us or... But they're the only birds there. So even though you're not...
The cane case is going to get scrambled.
I don't know that point, though. Either he recognizes the... Or he doesn't recognize. If he doesn't recognize, it doesn't matter if it's 2 to 3 or 3 to 2.
Yeah. Or 5 to 10.
It's not so. It's not so. In other words, I don't need to recognize in order to say these are mine. I dedicated birds. I left. I came back. And there are birds there. Unless you're going to give me reason to think that these are different, such as they have a different color, I'm going to assume these are the same birds.
What if I recognize the birds as being mine? Does it matter how many there are there?
If I recognize the birds as being mine...
Does it matter how many there are there?
No. If I know them, then I'm fine.
That's the last mission. That's what Beit Hillel is saying. That's all you have to do.
Assuming that what we are talking about here is where you can't recognize them, and you're just saying, look, there were birds here, I dedicated them, I see no reason to think these are different birds, there's no marking that says to me these are different from what was here. The only reason I have doubts is because either movement has happened, and now I'm getting scared, because I know something has moved, because there were three and now there were two, or even worse, I know there's a new bird, because there were only two before, and now there are three. And what we're saying is that where there is movement, because there were three and now there are two, that doesn't bother me. I can still go with the assumption that the remaining two were from the birds I dedicated. However, if I know that there is a new bird here, then I have a different problem. And the problem that I have is, even if two out of the three are birds I dedicated, and I can't even guarantee that, but let's say that's true, I don't know whether the bird I take out of the mixture is going to be one of the ones that I dedicated. That's where my problem lies. My problem is not whether there are other birds outside or not outside. That doesn't make a difference. My problem is that the mixture of three birds that's sitting here includes a bird I'm not supposed to eat, and I don't know which one it is. And if you'll tell me, well, that's okay, because it's batel, then my answer to you is going to be, it's not batel, because I don't even know for sure that two out of them are mine. I don't have any guarantees on that front that two out of them are mine. That's Rashi's answer. Tosafot's going to give me a different answer. But that I think, is what Rashi is trying to say.
He prepared two white. He comes the next day, and they're two white, but it doesn't look like the same birds anymore.
If he says it doesn't look like the same birds, he's out.
Period.
He's done. That's like, they might as well be black.
Okay.
Yeah. Tosafot gives a different approach. If you take a look at the top Tosafot, Ikachad Dema'ariv Behu, he says, V'im Tomer, you might ask, as we were, V'liv Dol Beruba. Why don't we say that the third bird, whichever one it is Batel Barov? Sorry?
I'm just
reading ahead. He says, Lomar, you could answer, De Ba'ale Chaim Lo Ba'li De Chashivi. Living things are not Batel. That's a general rule. So they are considered significant. That's one answer. Inami, alternatively, Havali Davash Yesh Lo Matirin La Achar Yom Tov.
Is that true?
Why wouldn't it be? Well, first of all, let me translate it. It's something which is aser now, but if you wait, will become permitted on its own. And we already said at the beginning of the Masechta that if you have something which will become mutter eventually on its own, then you have to wait. And we discussed why that's true, but that is a principle. It will not be nullified even in 1,000. Alan, what's your challenge to that?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of remember the case of where he's counting out his maestros and trumas with basically his flock of sheep, and he loses count.
Yeah, the eighth is the ninth, the ninth is the tenth is the 11th, whatever it is, yeah.
Is it okay? So he can just designate any one in that situation.
That's not a bittul discussion, though. That's a different problem, which is how, when the Torah gives you a description of how you count, and it's about Yaha'asiri Yalachem Kodesh, so it specifies it has to be the tenth. What do you do now when it's, you may have multiple tenths? So that's our opening case, is if you know that they're different, you're stuck. If you dedicated two and now there are three, so you're also stuck. Because at least one of them in the mix is Aser, maybe even more than one. If you dedicated three and you found two, then I don't assume that all three left, Rashi says, and therefore it's going to be Mutter. So here, Tosafot turns what we just said on its head. Tosafot Chad says, wait a minute, you're telling me Mutter? You might ask, right? This is a Davash Yesh L'Matirin, just as much as the previous case was. You have doubt, because you don't know for sure, and it's a Davash Yesh L'Matirin, all the birds are going to become mutter if I just wait till Yantif is over. So why are you telling me that we're making? The Yesh L'Omar, so he says, you could answer, he says, you could answer that since two remained, there were two that were there. So the I shouldn't say that. Well, since we assume that the original two are the ones that are there, so in such a case, we definitely will depend on being Mekel. In other words, what Tosus is really saying in this, and we're going to see it in another Tosus on the Gemara, is that this principle of Davash Yesh L'Matirin, that if you're in doubt, you're going to have to wait, doesn't apply to every conceivable case of doubt. There's a difference between real doubt and insignificant doubt. Real doubt is, I had two, and now there are three, and with any bird that I pick up, there's a 33% chance that it's the wrong bird. That's real doubt. Whereas this one, where you're saying, well, I know one bird left, maybe that means that all of them left, and these two birds are actually new, that relies on a whole series of ifs, right? If not only did the first bird leave, but also bird number two and bird number three left, and these two birds happen to come in here, and they happen to look enough like the first ones that I'm getting confused between them. So that is a much more remote doubt. So even though we have a rule that we've defined that Davashi Yesh L'Matirin is not Batel, the answer is not necessarily. If your doubt is small enough, then we will say it is Batel. Not Davashi Yesh L'Matirin, I'm sorry, not that it's Batel. Davashi Yesh L'Matirin we are strict with in a case of doubt, but not if your doubt is a minimal doubt. That's the idea. That's what Tosus is demonstrating here.
I mean, we're dealing with an inyan of Moksa. In the other case of the two and the defined three, one and a third is definitely not designated, and it's definitely Moksa. Here, where it's an inyan of Moksa, where it's your kavana of what you've done, would the rabbis care? In other words, let's say you have the two, you designated three, two are there, and they look close enough. Do they care about the Rabbanan in this case? In other words, you've done your action to say, I plan on shechting two birds.
Yeah.
So now is it even relevant?
Why wouldn't they care? In other words, we had reasons for requiring you to do this, right? One of the reasons we had for requiring you to do this was to make sure you're going to have a proper Yom Tov meal.
Right.
Because we were scared that if you don't, and Shammai even wants you to pick them up and handle them.
And you're respecting the rabbi's concept of muksa by designating.
It's not about respecting their concept of muksa. It's about making sure you're going to have a proper meal. Because otherwise, what's going to end up happening is, not in terms of not having a meal, because now there's nothing you can do about that.
Right.
But in terms of the possibility that you're going to pick them up to shecht and then realize that they're too scrawny, and then you're going to put them back down, and now you picked it up, shalal etzarech. So maybe we'll tell you shouldn't pick it up because these aren't the birds that you dedicated. That would have been the possibility.
Okay.
It's moot because we don't say that, but that's what we could have said. So the Gemara goes back to this case where the dedicated birds are gone. The black birds and the white birds, and you dedicated white birds and you found black birds, and without question, it seems, the original birds are gone.
Yeah. So it's not say that? I mean, if there's two different... Is it not a derisa in some ways? If two birds come out of nowhere, is it not some way to say that? They're like wild birds flying in from somewhere else or something like that?
Well, that's the question of muksa.
Yeah, muksa is
good. Right, that's the question of what the nature is of this hachana that we are requiring. If we understand it to be a derabanan, which I think that's what we had said, then But the Gemara is bothered because it's too obvious. Our opening case is too obvious. If you're telling me, as we've said, that you require hachana, and now you give me a case in which the birds that are there are not the ones that I dedicated, because we're not assuming a magic act, so why do they need a mishnah to tell me the birds that are there are usur? Right? Why isn't this 2+2? That's what the Gemara wants to know. Pshita, it's obvious that these birds that are there, whichever color they are going to be usur. So the Gemara says, Rabba says, I will give you a different case. Amar Rabba, hacha b'mayaskina, and Rabba says, what's our case here? Kegon shezimein shchorim ulevanim. The deal was that you actually had, as Rashi says, b'shnei kinin, you had two different nests. Now, the whole segregation thing is ugly, so let's not go there. But that's the way it is. You had two nests, and there were dividers and areas between them and all that. And in one nest, you had the blackbirds, and in one nest, you had the whitebirds. Shazima and Shchar Mulevanim, you dedicated blackbirds and whitebirds in separate areas. V'hishkim u'matza shcharim v'makam levanim u'levanim makam shcharim. You get up the next morning, and lo and behold, the nest that had held the blackbirds now is holding the white ones, and vice versa. What in the world do you do now? So, I would have said, mutter. Why? Mahu disema, hani inhu ninu. I would say these are the same birds. These are they, or these are them. These hapucha is hapucha, and they simply switch places. When you left, right, it's not as though a brand new supply of birds came into town overnight, chased out all the birds you had, and settled in, and the blackbirds decided to be here, or the whitebirds decided to be here. It's more likely to assume that there was some disturbance in the coop overnight, and everybody fluttered around, and the blackbirds ended up where the white ones were, and the white ones ended up with the blackbirds.
Why can't you say that he's simply, his recollection is faulty? Or did you say because he's a Javier, he could never make a mistake?
Why not assume that he simply got it wrong? It's interesting. No one is suggesting that. No one here suggests that. Then maybe his memory was wrong. I don't know. Maybe because he's a man, he won't admit it. I don't know. He says, I insist, this is where the blackbirds were, and this is where the whitebirds were. That would have been my assumption approaching the Mishnah. If the Mishnah had given me a case like that, which is what we're now saying was the case, you dedicated blackbirds and whitebirds in different spaces, you came back and you found them now swapped. So I would have said, same mother, they're the same birds. Kamash Malan, and what my Mishnah is teaching us is Hanach Azdu La'alma V'Hani Achrini Ninhu. I do in fact have to be concerned that the original birds are gone, and this indeed is a case of new birds who flew in and took over the coop. That's the idea. And then the Gemara says, that's really interesting, because that connects to a question that we have regarding identifying items. And this is the issue of Rov versus Karov. Okay, so explaining it outside before we see it in the Gemara, because this is the principle that's going to define everything we do. Rov means
majority.
Karov means
close by.
Right. So the question, proximity. Right. So the question is this: these birds, right? The blackbirds that are right there in, let's say we're looking at this coop, and you've got your blackbirds have been here the night before, and your whitebirds have been here the night before, and now they're reversed. The whitebirds are here, the blackbirds are here. So I look at the blackbirds that are sitting here, and I have two choices. Choice number one is to say they're likely the birds from next door, right? Because that's Karov. That's right nearby. Assume a minimum of movement. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, you know, there are a ton of blackbirds in the village, or in the outlying area, in the surrounding areas. And therefore, maybe I should say that there are, I'll make up a number, there are 1,000 blackbirds on the block, and only 5 of them were in the next. So maybe I should assume if these birds are from the 995, the Rove, in other words. So the question is, do I determine their identity based on Rov and say they're like the 995 other birds? Or do I determine it by Karov and say they're like the 5 that had been in the nest right next door? Well, since we concluded that these are usser, that you're not allowed to use them, that means we are saying Rov over Karov. Mm-hmm. Got it? Mm-hmm. That's the idea. So watch what the Gemara does. Lema Messiah Leil Rabbi Chanina. Let's say this supports Rabbi Chanina. This Gemara, this conclusion of ours. Da'ama Rabbi Chanina, because Rabbi Chanina said, Rov v'Karov, if you have to choose between the principle of Rov, the principle of Karov in identifying an item, Halach Acharov, he says, follow the majority. So does our Gemara support Rabbi Chanina? To which the Gemara says, not necessarily. There's going to be another case, we haven't seen it yet, in which Abaye is going to discuss a nest and birds that got shuffled around. And in that other case, Abaye is going to come up with another scenario. K'da'amar Abaye bedaf. In the case that Abaye is going to discuss, there are other non-dedicated birds that are on a shelf right outside the nest. Right? Think of like a classic birdhouse, and there's an area right outside that the birds can perch on. So there was an area right outside this nest, and there were non-dedicated birds on it. So therefore, you actually had Karov right outside, right? You had you had non-dedicated birds that were Karov. So Hachanami Bedaf here too, we'll say that's what's going on. And therefore, maybe the reason why I say these birds are off limits is not because I follow Rove and say they're like the 995 birds on the block. Maybe I'm actually following Karov because they were like birds that were sitting right outside the nest. You follow?
No, I didn't get the gospel.
What we've done is we've invented a new pool of birds. We had initially said, here's my nest, nest number one. Here's nest number two, right? This is where I found the blackbirds. Originally, the way we looked at it was, there had been blackbirds in nest one, and there are general blackbirds, you know, around, right? These are dedicated birds. They're mutter. These are not dedicated birds. They're usser. So by saying that these birds here are treated, in number two, are treated as usser, what I'm doing is I'm saying, go with the rove.
Yeah.
That was the initial way to look at it. But now what we're suggesting is, no, there was actually another pool of birds right here that were off-limits birds. They're karov. And so maybe what we're doing is we're saying these birds were identifying with the karov that were right outside the nest. We were not taking... So you can't prove Rabbi Hanina is right from here.
But those are wild birds too, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly, that's why they're off-limits. That's exactly right.
You know, they're karov, they're wild.
Well, being karov doesn't make it usable.
Wild just means not dedicated.
Not dedicated.
That's my thought. If they're wild birds, then say that.
Russians seem to apply their wild.
Don't get me to say that. We'll get to say that.
Russians seem to apply their wild birds.
That's where we're going. Okay. That's a whole other thing we have to discuss.
Russians seem to apply their wild birds. And they go.
Right. Well, that's true in general. We're talking about an area where
they try to get into the mess, but the ones that are in there don't let them in. So they kind of hang around.
Right. And that's going to fit into the conversation in the Gemara. But the idea of these birds being wild or not wild, the point is that they're not dedicated.
Right.
And therefore can't use them. So the birds that are right outside are Asur and they are Karov. And the fact that we declare the birds that are inside to be Asur may not indicate we followed Rove, it may indicate we followed Karov, in fact. So here, I thought it would be worthwhile to take some time on this issue of Rove versus Karov, because it's a fascinating question of how we determine an object's identity. And in order to get it, you have to see the core Gemara that Rabbi Hanina comes from, and that's source Aleph, the Gemara Bava Basra. The Gemara Bava Basra is not dealing with Yom Tov. They're dealing with issues of ownership. Okay, I find a bird around somewhere. As Alan said, these birds were able to fly in and out of the nest regularly on their own. I don't know what nest this bird that I found came from, or if it came from no nest at all. So the question is, what's the status of the bird? So the Mishnah in Source Aleph says, Nipul hanimtza v'socha mishim amma. Nipul is a bird that fell. They can't fly, whatever the case may be. It's found within 50 amos of a nest. Harehu shel bala shovach. Or not a nest, but a dovecot. Same principle for our purposes. So we treat it as property of that dovecot that was within 50 amos. Chutz mechamishim amos. It's more than 50 amos away from a dovecot. All right, Yushal Motz, oh, whoever finds it gets it. Nimtza bein shnei shovachos. What if it is between two dovecots and within the 50 amos range of each? So karov lezeh shalo, karov lezeh shalo. You go with whichever one it's closer to. Mechza al mechza, they bring out the chains, and lo and behold, it's actually equidistant. Shneyem yachlogu. So what do? They split it. Shecht it and have dinner. They sell it off for cash.
These aren't in somebody's chutzah, right?
No. If you're in someone's chutzah, the game is over.
Yes, is there like a chutzah rabbin you're talking
about? Yeah, correct. If it was in a chutzah, then the chutzah would acquire it.
It doesn't matter what kind of bird. Any bird.
No.
I mean, not a flying bird.
No, we're going to talk, I think we're going to talk about here, if I remember correctly, you know, whether these are birds that are flightless or that are able to, how far they can go, yeah. So that's the Mishnah. So on this Mishnah, the Gemara says the following. Amar Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina says, Rov v'karov, holchin achar harov. If you have a choice between Rov and Karov, you follow the majority, right? That's the rule you've already seen. I brought you in Source Beis, I brought you Rashi, who explains why I would follow either Rove or Karov. Rashi explains that both of these are actually de'oraisas. Ruba de'oraisa de'chziv achrei rabim lahatos, right? Parshas Mishpatim, the way you handle cases is you follow the majority. So we're going beyond majority judgment in court to a majority that has nothing to do with any based in at all. And saying, majority rules. Vikurva de oraisa, but following proximity is also de oraisa, and they go to the case of Egla Arufa, where the city that is closest to the body that was found from the person who was murdered outside of town, the closest city is the one that's going to be responsible, so clearly we follow Karov. Both of them have biblical precedent. So Rabbi Hanina said, okay, go with Rov. And the Gemara continues, "Va'avagav de ruba de oraisa v'kurva de oraisa," as we just saw in Rashi. "Afilu achi ruba adiv." Nonetheless, ruba wins. So the Gemara brings three challenges to Rabbi Hanina. First challenge: Masiv Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks the pasuk of Egla Arufa, "V'haya ir hakrovah hechalal." You go with the city that is closest to the body. "Va'avagav di ikach risi dinefisha mina." Even though there's another city that is larger, right? How can you tell me Rove trumps Karov? Right. Then in Egla Rufa, we should go with the largest city. So the Gemara answers Bidaleka. No. That's the Torah isn't talking about that. The Egla Rufa case in the Torah is talking about where the largest city is the closest city. To which the Gemara says, "Come on, Belezel Basar Rufa Dalma. What are the majority of the world?" Right. In other words, you can't tell me that this city contains 51% of the global population. So he says, "Biyoshev is bein haharim." It's where it is among mountains. In other words, there's a limit on how you define Rov. Rov doesn't mean Rov of the planet. Rov still has to be within, some conceivable, definable space. So that knocks out our first challenge. Second challenge comes from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah meaning the Bava Basra Mishnah, the bird that fell out of the nest. Tanan. The Mishnah said that this nipul, this fallen bird, belongs to the owner of the davka. End of quote. Even if there is another bird, even though there's another shovach, another davka that is bigger, right? You're going with the closest davka. That means you're going with karov, not going with rov. So the Gemara answers Bidaleka. Now, again, the nearby Dovkat is the largest one. Iyahi, the Gemara says, "Ah, really? Ema Seifa, look at the end of that Mishnah." The next case in the Mishnah said, "Chutz mechamishim ama harayu shel motzo." If it's outside of the 50 amos, then it goes with the person who finds it. V'idaleka vade me'ahu nafal. If there is no other Dovkat anywhere, then it came from this Dovkat. Whether it's within 50 amos or not within 50 amos, there's no other way this bird got there. So the Gemara answers, "Hacha b'mayaskina." No, you know what the case is. B'midade. We're talking about a bird that is sort of hopping along with small movements. D'amar Rav Ukva Bar Chama says, "Kol midade ein midade yoser mechamishim." It is simply not going more than 50 amos. I don't know how this bird got there, because there is no other dove cut around, but somebody dropped it. It happened somehow. But I don't need to assume that it came from this davka, because it did not come from this davka. Oy, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Someone really wants in. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Raglo achas besoch hamishim ama, v'raglo achas chutz mechamishim ama. Mahu. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asks, what do you do if you have a bird that has one leg within 50 amos and one leg outside of 50 amos? What do you do then, Shirley? I brought you Rashi there, because he's giving them such a hard time. Case. Okay.
How many angels in
it? Yeah. Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, we'll go on to our third. Nimsa bein shnei shovchos, karov lezeshalo, v'karov lezeshalo. We said in the Mishnah that if you find the bird between two dovecots and it is closer to one of them, you go with the one it is closer to. So it's very clearly a statement of karov. Even though one of them is larger than the other, you're determining it based on karov. So the Gemara says, "Hacha b'mayaskinan." What's our case? Sheshnehen shavin. Our case is where the two nests are of equal size, so there is no rov. Once again, v'lezel basaruba di'alma. Maybe there are other large ones out there.
No, we're talking about where is a path, a space that is bounded by vineyards. Demisa, demayama asi, kevin demididi lamatsi asi. So if it was coming from elsewhere, it wouldn't have been able to make it, because it couldn't have made it through the grapevines. How do I know that? Because this is bird psychology. You can ask your aunt about this. Birds that are fluttering along don't flutter past where they can see the original nest. It's like small children, right? You know, they have to be able to look back and see where it came from. If it can't, then it's not going to go any further. That's bird psychology for you. So the Gemara says you can't challenge this idea. Rabbi Chanina stands, despite the challenges that we brought from cases that seem to support Karav. The Gemara then asks, Itmar, Chavis Shetzafa Banahar, or it doesn't ask, it presents the following case. If a river, if a barrel is floating in the river, okay? Amar Rav, Nimtzeis Keneged Ir Sheruba Yisrael, Mutter. Keneged ir sheruba nachrim asira. So Rav says, you assume that it comes from the city near where it was found. So if it was found by a city that is mostly Jewish owned, we can assume it came from the Jewish city and the wine, and it is going to be fine. If it is found near a city that is majority not Jewish, asir. Ushmuel amar. And Shmuel says, no, afilu nimtzeis keneged ir sheruba Yisrael asira, even if it is found by a city that is mostly Jewish owned, it is still going to be asir. Emor mehai dikra asai. Because I have to worry, I still have to worry that it came from, I don't remember this,
came from the Goyish place, the Korv.
Yeah, but I have Dal Kufresh Aleph. We're talking about it came for, it's found near, no, the Karov is a Yisrael one.
Has it come from Rov, which is not kosher? Rov is William.
Yeah.
No, he said, well, I guess he's still.
What's the problem?
It's a derisa.
No, my problem is just the word.
Yeah.
The next last word, I don't remember this.
But it has to mean that it comes from the road.
It's coming from elsewhere.
You want it
more? No, not
maybe
a
road. Yeah,
you have a Baba Basra?
Yeah. Maybe it's Dikra.
Yeah, but what is that? That doesn't help, yeah. It's a Dikra Nose taking us back to Kisiyadam. The answer must be some form of boat, but I don't remember it.
Or a current or something like that, right? Could be so many different.
No. With Mehai, it's got to be from a boat. It has to be some form of a. Yeah.
Concept, right?
No, thank you. Regulation Gemara, please.
So if you hope to talk, she says something to it.
Yeah, well, Rashbam, whatever it'll be.
What's the
Daf? Chav Gimel Amud Beis, Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. It's got to be a boat of one kind or another. But I think that's.
I just don't get what the law says. If it's a river, I can assume that it's floating, so I can know it. You find it close to a Jewish city, and it is from there.
Your concern is that it was came from somewhere upstream.
Yeah.
And what do you bring one of those for?
Well, then maybe if you can't see the meaning there, it's a little help of translation for you.
Thank you.
Spoken like a true yeshiva elitist.
Betcha. Right, that's the Shvil Shal Kramim.
That's cool. So blah, blah, blah.
No, but it's a crutch.
Even with all the commentaries and everything else.
The Damsha of the Prosdor, right? And it says Connecticut, right? But it's Gersh will be used to all the sea.
It's on the face, no?
No, it's Chatal and Abadal, it's already on the next side.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Maybe the Krof, even better. Rashi says, Shem Mechoz Hu Al Nahar Pros. It's the name of a city on the Euphrates.
A Goyishim city, obviously.
But the point in mentioning it is, it's actually, it's Charlie's point. It is upstream on the Euphrates. Yeah. And the point is that when you found it, you don't know where it came from. You're assuming it came from the city where you found it, but on what basis? So that's what he's saying. That maybe it came from the city upstream. Exactly. So Shmuel, that's the statement that Shmuel makes. So the Gemara says, Lema b'Rabbi Chanina k'miflagi. Let's say that's, in fact, the debate regarding Rabbi Chanina's position. Dimar isleid Rabbi Chanina, right? One is taking the view that the Rabbi Chanina articulates that we follow Rov, rather than Karbal. If you include Dikra, right, the city that's upstream, that's what gives you the Rov.
Because it's a larger city.
Because it's not Karov, but it is right. Rov. But it is Rov.
How much larger is it?
Large enough, apparently.
It doesn't really matter because the surrounding area is non-Jewish, so it's
maybe it's not
Rov.
Well, look what he says. Look what he says. Let's say they're debating Rabbi Chanina's point. Umar leslayed Rabbi Chanina, and the other one does not accept. The other one does not accept Rabbi Chanina.
Right.
I actually had written in my notes that could be from another city. Okay, thanks. So the Gemara says, lo, dekuli alma isluhu Rabbi Chanina. The answer is no. Everybody agrees with Rabbi Chanina that you go with Rov. So what's the story here? V'hacha v'hakamifki. Here's the machlokas here. Demar safar amisa demay haik dikra asai. One of them says, if it came all the way from that city, it would have been sunk already. Mm-hmm. You have currents in this river, and the barrel wouldn't have survived. Umar sabar harifa dinara nakadva. So another one answers no. The river flows very quickly, and therefore it would have been fine. So that's the.
It's a bit disappointing.
In what sense?
Response.
Okay.
It doesn't sound very.
The bottom line is that what we're doing is supporting Rabbi Chanina, who takes the position that you go with Rov over Karov, and establishing that, which leads to another question. But I think, well, do we have 5 minutes to go a little further with it?
Sure.
Okay. The question that you do have to address is what if it's a clear Karov, what I call on your sheets Korva de Muchach. It's clear cut that this thing came from whatever's right next door. So the Rashba writes in Source Gimel, Perish Va Filu Bekurva de Muchach. He says, what we're saying here is even where it is a kurva that is clear, it is clearly from this next, right, yeah, there's something that's so obviously the source right in the proximity. De Bekurva de Lo Muchach, Kule Ama Modu Bey, Dazlin and Basaruba. Because if the nearby one is not so clear cut, then everybody's going to agree that we don't follow it. There's no mandate to follow Karov in the first place if it's not clear. The Kuleyama Modube Dazlin and Basaruba, Kedisa Paraglo Yachbor, Pukit Rabichanin of Rabbanan, like found in the Gemara that we just saw here. The question isn't where the Karov is unclear. The Machlokas is where the Karov is clear cut, and we're still following Rabbi Chanina to go with Rov. That's the position that the Rashba takes. And Tosfos in Bava Basra agrees in the end. Tosfos here in Source Dalet on that Gemara about Rov and Karov, he says, V'im Tomar, you might ask, my Kamash Malan, why did I need this whole sugya to teach me anything? Masisani, it's an explicit Mishnah, it's one of everybody's favorite cases. Teisha Chanuyos, Kulan Mochos Basar Shchuta, Ve'achas Mocheres Basar Nevela, right? Ubanim Tzahalach HaHarov. Right, we say that if I find a piece of meat outside of the stores, I assume it came from the majority of stores, 9 stores sell kosher meat, then this meat is kosher. That's clear-cut case of following Rov. No one asked you which store was the closest store. So why are you having this conversation? It sounds like even if it happens to be next to the store that sells treif. So the Tiris Rivam, Ribra Mordechai is the Rivam, De'imi mas nisa hava amina kigon de'in dalsas medina ne'ulos de'ika tre rubi. If you were just going to rely on the 9 stores case, then you could have said that that is a narrow case. That is talking about a case in which the gates of the city are open, and therefore it isn't even about the majority within this city, it's about the greater majority in the world. You have this larger majority that you're working with, and that's why Rove wins. Assuming your greater majority is in fact selling kosher meat. The Kamashmul and Rabbi Chanina, Dafilu Dalsas Medina Ne'ulos, Deleka Lacharuba, and so Rabbi Chanina is teaching me, no, even if you only have one Rov, it still beats Karov. That's the first answer. Second answer, Venira Larei, De'imi Masnisin Havamina Nimtza Be'emtza. I added in brackets, Deleka Karov. If we were working with our Mishnah alone, with the Mishnah of the 10 stores alone, I would have assumed that that Mishnah is talking about where you found it, and it wasn't closer to the trace one.
In the middle of everything.
It wouldn't have proven, it wouldn't have proven me anything from there. And then the third answer that that we get here is the one that brings us back to the Rashba about Kurva Demuchach. Ve'od Nira Lari, D'Rabbi Chanina Asa La'ashme'inan, Da'afilu Be'Kurva Demuchach Da'azlinan Basaruba. That what Rabbi Chanina is trying to teach me is, even where the Karov is clear cut, we still follow Rov, which I wouldn't have known from the 10 stores. V'chein mashu b'samoch gabechavis shetzafa benar, like in the case of the barrel on the river, deboi lememer derav da'amar k'neged ir sheruba Yisrael muteres, less late Rabbi Chanina, where the Gemara wants to say that Rav says you go with the Jewish city if it's found by a Jewish city, so it sounds like he's saying Karov, not Rov. Ve'echi mitokma, dehamashma demuteres afilu nimtze samoch lebayis nachri. He says, how could you do that? It sounds like it's mutter even if it's found right next to a non-Jew's house. Ve'zeo mitam da'azil basa Rov ha'ir Yisrael luk Rabbi Chanina. Elevade legabe kurva de beso shal nachri havi kurva de lo muchach. He says the answer is that the regarding being close to the non-Jew's house, that is what we call kurva de lo muchach. That's a proximity that is not explicit, that's not clear cut. Why? Kevin Shadarim Rov Yisrael Bosa Ha'ir, because most of the city is Jewish. And
where does that come from, though? That's not, because that's not the case. If you're looking at the stores, you're not looking at the city.
Oh, no, he's on the river case right now.
Yeah, but why don't we look at the stores and why don't we look at the city?
In other words, why is it in the case of the meat that you found? Why are we asking about how many stores there are? Why don't we ask how many houses there are?
Right.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Why, we're just assuming this meat came from the butcher shop, not from a private citizen's house.
Or even if there were five Goyish stores and five Jewish stores, if the majority of people in the town are Jewish.
Well, I'm gonna turn your question a little bit. I'm not gonna answer it, but I'm gonna turn your question a little bit because I could assume that the entire supply of meat in the city came from these stores, and therefore these stores are your indicator. But the question that you're asking, I could ask it this way. What if it's 50% Jewish and 50% non-Jewish, or 50% kosher eating and 50% non-kosher eating,
right,
and therefore maybe the one store that is the non-kosher store does a higher volume?
Well,
that would be the way to ask. I think that would be the way to ask the question. Because it's not so much that it may have come from someone's house if I know that 90% of the supply in the city is kosher meat. The question is, where do you get this idea that they're all dealing in the same volume, such that one equals one equals one? The only answer I can give to that is that, by default, this must be our case. Mm-hmm. That you're dealing with stores that are all equal in size, and that, in fact, that's what the Gemara is assuming, yeah. Otherwise, the case falls apart. So yeah, I think you have to assume that. But going back to Tosis's point, he's saying that as far as proximity to the non-Jew's house, if it washes up on the shore by the non-Jew's house, that doesn't mean it came from him. Most of the people there are Jews in the city. V'rav asal basaruba hecha da kurva lo muchacha udelo k'rabi chanina. And Rav says, I follow Rav, only where it's not an explicit Karov. If it were an explicit Karov, I would follow Karov. Avalosa ir keneged hay dekira, there's that city again, havi kurva demuchach. Whereas saying it's from this city and not from the city upstream, that's a clear-cut kurva. Effectively, what Tosfos is doing here, I haven't thought about it, but I think this is true. What Tosfos is saying here is that the definition of kurva demuchach isn't the way I first said it. I had said korva de muchach means that it's really close, and therefore I'm more likely to identify it with this place. But that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, it's much closer to this than it is to anything else. That's his point.
Almost the level of certainty
from the other place. He's going based on the concept of it can't be arriving from that location.
Is he? I didn't see him saying that. Where do you get that?
Well, when he's saying that it can't be coming from that other city. I mean, what's his basis of saying
Where does
that?
He say that it can't be coming from the other city? I didn't see him say that. I think what he's trying to tell us is that just logically, and it makes sense logically, my confidence that it is from this Karov versus that doesn't have to do with how close it is to this. It has to do with how close it is to this relative to how close it is to that. Imagine it this way. Let's go back to our birds and our dovecots. If I have a dovecot here and I find the bird one amma away from this dovecot, it's pretty impressive, and I'm likely to say it's from there. If my other dovecot is 100 ammos away, I'm again likely to say it's from the one that's one amma away. What if the other dovecot is actually right next to it? So it's one amma from this dovecot and it's 5 ammos from that dovecot. Am I still going to be that confident that it's the one amma one? No. Because the difference between the two of them isn't that great. What makes something korva de muchach, and this is what Tosis' point is, what makes something korva de muchach is relative proximity. What's number one and what's number two, and what's the gap between option number one and option number two? So when I'm dealing with the barrel washing up in town, he says, even if it washes up outside of the Nachri's house, so there's another house, another, you know, if it's Thornhill, you know, 0 amos away. That's not going to be an impressive proof that it came from this fellow's house. That's what he's doing. He's defining korva de muchach. And the chiddush then for us is even greater, which is that even where you have korva de muchach, even where there's a large gap in between number one and number two, we're still going to follow Rav. That's what Rabbi Chanina is saying.
At the end he says, if you have korva muchach, you don't care after all.
That's what Rav was going to say, until we ended up saying, but we follow Rabbi Chanina. But that's what we wanted to say for Rav. And in the Gemara, they explain the different reason for why Rav would say this, because he couldn't make it, and so on. But that's the idea, that the argument pre-Rabbi Chanina was to say korva de muchach wins, and Rabbi Chanina's novelty is, no, it doesn't.
It's not clear how you determine it's korva de muchach.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like you're going to have to go to Beis Din and basically apply. It doesn't matter, because in the end we take Rav anyway.
Right.
But yes, we won't have a clear distinction between them.
It's a question of fact in each particular case.
Yeah.
River floating, river not floating, right. You know.
This is all Pnei Yeshua to see, but I'll save that for next time, God willing. Shkaya.